Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Read from Srimad
Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Explanation of the Vedic Path, Text Number 7.
Desha kala di bhavanam
vastunam amashattama
gunadosa vidhiyete
niyamartham hi karmanam.
Desha
of space.
Kala,
time,
Adi,
and so on.
Bhavanam,
of such states of existence.
Vastunam,
of things.
Mama,
by me.
Sattama,
O most saintly Uddhava.
Guna dosa,
piety and sin.
Vidhiyete,
are established.
Niyama artam,
for the restriction.
He
certainly.
Karmanam,
of fruitive activities.
My saintly Uddhava, in order to restrict materialistic activities, I have established that which is proper and improper among all material things, including time, space, and all physical objects.
Purport. The word niyama artham, in order to restrict, is significant in this verse.
A conditioned soul falsely identifies with his material senses and thus considers anything giving immediate satisfaction to the body to be good and anything inconvenient or disturbing to be bad. By higher intelligence, however, one recognizes long-term self-interest and danger. For example, medicine may be immediately bitter, but by calculating one's long-term interest, one accepts the bitter medicine to cure a disease that is not immediately troublesome but ultimately fatal. Similarly, Vedic literature restricts the sinful propensities of human beings by establishing what is proper and what is improper among all the objects and activities of the material world. Because everyone must eat, the Vedas prescribe foods in the mode of goodness and not those which are sinful, such as meat, fish and eggs. Similarly, one is advised to live in a peaceful and pious community and not in association with sinful persons nor in an unclean or turbulent environment. By designating and restricting the exploitation of the material world, Vedic knowledge gradually brings a conditioned soul to the platform of material goodness. At that stage, one becomes eligible to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead and enter the transcendental stage of life. It should be remembered that such mere eligibility does not constitute actual qualification. Without Krishna consciousness, mere mundane piety can never qualify a conditioned soul to go back home, back to Godhead. Within this world, we are all infected by false pride, which must be diminished through submission to the Vedic injunctions. One who is completely engaged in the loving service of the Lord need not adopt these preliminary methods, for he directly contacts the Personality of Godhead through the spontaneous process of surrender. the previous verse, the Lord explained why Vedic literatures assign different values to the bodies of different living entities. And here the Lord explains the Vedic value system in regard to the material objects that interact with these bodies. Om Gyanatamirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmae Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadaha Mahiyam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripata Maham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Okay, so Jivasya tattva, what is it? Jigyasa. Jivasya tattva jigyasa. Something I read yesterday. The purpose of the human form of life is to inquire about spiritual life. The real purpose of it. Prabhupada says, simple living, high thinking. Right? And in order to practice this simple living and high thinking means to inquire not about, you know, where's my food, where's my sense gratification, where's my shelter, which is basically the activities of the animals. One is meant to inquire about the absolute truth. And so within the Vedas we find a careful analysis, especially the Sankhya philosophy. And Prabhupada explains how Sankhya means to count. So you find it in the Bhagavad Gita, you find it in the Bhagavatam. And we can assume that it's elsewhere within the Vedic literature. There are definitions or descriptions of the elements that exist within the creation, the various elements, the gradations, if you like. So, you know, we have the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let's start off with, you know, the Ani, if you like, the beginning, the source of everything. What's that? And he is the source of Parasya Sakya Vividhaiva Suryate. Prabhupada often quotes this point. Parasya Saktiya Vividhaiva Sri. He's the source of multifarious energies. There is nobody equal to him. He's the source of everything. So from him come these emanations, these Shaktis, potencies, powers, if you like. And those Shaktis are analysed in the Vedic literature, categorised and for the benefit of those who are jivasya tattva jigyasa, those who are interested in inquiring about the absolute truth, and making progress in discerning or discriminating between that which is ultimately that which is matter and that which is spirit, looking for the essence of things, the core essence. And you know, ultimately it's about association, because as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, sangat sanjayate kama, as with whatever we associate, then we become attached to that, or we become affected by it. We become influenced by association. And so, previously there was a description, in the previous verse, the purport explains that it was a description of the various bodies. Right? Earth, water, fire, air, ether are the five basic elements that constitute the bodies of all living entities. Bhumi, rapo, nalo, vayu, kammano, buddhire, vacha. Ahankara, miti, amme. Vina, prakriti, ashtada. Eight elements that make up the material creation. Five gross, three subtle. And we've been discussing, actually this week at Krishna Fest, we're going to look at the three modes of material nature, because you've got the, you know, we've got the gross and the subtle body, but that's not all that influences us in the material world. There's the modes of material nature, the three modes of material nature, and according to the modes that we acquire or associate with, that will determine our consciousness. And you know, loosely explains the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavad Gita explains that the Varnashram system is an analysis of the different bodies that we all have according to the modes of material nature, the mixing of the modes of material nature. And the modes of material nature will determine whether we're predominantly Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Sudra, or animal species, right? If we look at the three modes of material nature and then look at the human beings in this day and age, then we can understand animals, basically, falling into the category of animals. There's not many Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas or Sudras around, to be frank. Mostly everybody's an animal. Bhagavatam says that, hogs, dogs, camels and asses. But don't tell them that. As Prabhupada says, you know, we're meant for simple living and high thinking, but when you encourage people in simple living, they're not very enthusiastic. They think it means going back to a primitive style of living. Right? It means going back to basics is scary for them. So, this analysis of all of the elements, there's the analysis of the bodies, but there's also analysis of the elements and the other features of the creation that exist, because they also have their influence or their shakti, their potency, their power. And one is meant to analyse the world in such a way so that one can see the good and the bad, as mentioned in the purport, not in relationship to the body, but rather the good and the bad in relationship to one's spiritual advancement. This is the important thing. Otherwise, as the example is given, you know, there are things which are positive, but which initially, this is especially a symptomatic of the mode of goodness. That which is like poison in the beginning. Right? Like going to school. When we're young kids, all of a sudden our parents decide that it's time to go to school. Because usually we're excited about going to school, but after a while we discover this is boring. We do the same old thing every day. Get the same old lunch. Have to go through the same routine. So after a while, you know, school is, oh no, I've got to go to school. But we know that actually it's beneficial for us to be educated. There's that saying, you know, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. So education is essential, but it requires discipline, it requires determination, patience. Actually, the qualities that are required to be successful in anything, and especially also successful in devotional service. Nariyat, one has to be determined. Dira, sober. Especially with spiritual life, one is recommended to the first two items of the items of surrender is to accept that which is favourable and reject that which is unfavourable. But sometimes which appears to be unfavourable is attractive to us, and we don't want to give it up. Or sometimes that which is favourable appears unattractive and we don't want to do it. You know, like getting up early in the morning is a good example. Or, what's another example? You know, giving up the association of our friends, so-called friends. Or, as I asked the question yesterday, you know, onions and garlic are vegetarian, why don't we eat them? Which is an example here of elements in the creation that are not that are detrimental to one's spiritual advancement. So one has to learn how to see things. If we depend on the mind and the senses and the body, there are things that we experience that we reject because for our immediate sense gratification we find them distasteful. And that's how material existence is based on, basically, material calculations revolving around the body. That's why the Vedas are given to override, if you like, the immediate impressions that we get from the mind and the senses and the materially contaminated intelligence. And so we're able to see things from a spiritual perspective. And can then see in things which might immediately be austere or unpalatable, see in them the seed of our future advancement. Right, so that, you know, the parents discipline the child to go to school, knowing that initially the child may not like the discipline, but in due course of time, he or she will get a taste for learning. Hopefully. I think all I ever managed to do going to the school eventually was be bored. But of course, a good teacher analyses the quality of the student and then teaches them accordingly. We've got a system that's not very personal, so it doesn't look at the qualities and the characteristics of the students. Unless you have a good teacher. A good teacher is able to see the natural inclination of the student and then fans that, encourages it so that they then are engaged according to their propensities, challenged according to their propensities. And so then the student thrives and is enthusiastic about their learning. So the Vedic construct, if you like, is designed to gradually elevate. You know, the purpose of the Varnashram system is to ultimately bring us all to the point of goodness. That doesn't mean automatically that we'll all be converted into Brahmanas necessarily, because each one of us has certain propensities. And those the material body and the material modes of material nature that we've acquired mean that we have certain prarabdha karma, which means, you know, we're stuck with what we've got. Right? But for the sudras, there are regulations. For the vaishyas, there are regulations. For the kshatriyas, there's regulations. For the brahmanas, there are regulations which basically bring everybody to the mode of goodness. Certain prescriptions, regulations. They can gradually elevate a person. That's interesting. It mentions here that just because one comes to the mode of goodness doesn't mean necessarily then that you're qualified. It gives you an opportunity. It's a bit like a springboard. You can take advantage of it and, you know, elevate yourself. But it doesn't mean necessarily that you're qualified to make spiritual advancement. Abrahma bhuvana loka puna avatuna juna. Krishna says, you know, from the topmost to the bottom, there's just a repeated cycle of birth and death. So even you may be in the mode of goodness, but if you're not able to capitalize on that and convert that into transcendental or spiritual knowledge, then you're still in the cycle of birth and death. You're still in the material world. Huh? So even coming to the mode of goodness is not necessarily the goal of existence. You know, just to become a brahmana. And I mentioned this before, you know, an example is the Jagyic brahmanas. They were given an opportunity to serve Krishna, but they, due to their being caught up in their brahminical position, they ignored the petition of the cowherd boys. Yet the wise of the brahmanas, who are supposedly, what should we say, inferior, supposedly, when they got an opportunity to serve Krishna and to give some foodstuffs, they were super enthusiastic. So, the Vedic process is a gradual process of elevation to bring people towards the mode of goodness, to a proper understanding of things, and so therefore by that elevation be given an opportunity to take to devotional service. But actually devotional service is the real, is the reality, it's the important factor, and that only comes about through getting the association of the devotees. So that's why we see that sometimes even people who are in the mode of ignorance, they get the association of the devotees and then immediately take advantage of it and are automatically elevated to devotional service without having to go through this gradual process. The gradual process is good, but it is not, it's not essential to become Krishna conscious. You know, material endeavours don't qualify one for self-realisation. Ultimately, they can set the scene. And now it's interesting. In devotional service, we're actually recommended to cultivate the mode of goodness. But in the context of devotional service, is already in the mode of goodness. That's why we're encouraged to follow the rules and regulations of Vaidhi Bhakti or Sadhana Bhakti. Because automatically by following those rules and regulations we come to the mode of goodness. You know, the food that we eat, the lifestyle, rising early, keeping clean. We even cultivate knowledge. The whole Bhagavatam class is about cultivating a proper understanding, a discriminatory understanding of things. So those activities are essentially in the mode of goodness, but not because of the material qualification, but because of the spiritual qualification. They automatically elevate us to the point of goodness. So it's devotional service is in the mode of goodness, but the mode of goodness doesn't necessarily mean devotional service, right? And that's why, you know, we recommended, Rupa Goswami has given us so many instructions, you know, and that's this word here in the purport that it says here. Niyamartam is significant in this verse. Niyamartam means the restrictions. So we have yama, niyama. Things that we do and things that we avoid. Or in the parlance, if you like, of Rupa Goswami, what's the second verse of the Nectar of Instruction? How does that start off? Overeating or over-collecting. Atyahara prayasas cha prajapo niyamagraha jana sangha chaloliam cha sadvidha what is it? Sadvidha is it? Bhakti vinashyati means to destroy. So you know, these items, we avoid them. Why? Because they destroy our devotional service. Overeating, over-endeavouring, or over-collecting. Talking about mundane things, being too attached to the rules and regulations, not understanding their proper application, or ignoring the rules and regulations. Jana Sangha, bad association, and being greedy for material things. Lolium, we should be greedy for devotional service. Lolium is actually recommended. Being enthusiastic about our bhakti, but being enthusiastic about material things is a detriment. So this is niyamartam. And then there's the positive. Utsaha nischaya jayat sattva kama pravartana. Again, jana sangha. Avoiding this, actually, that is mentioned twice. Bad association. Association is, in fact, you know, one of the reasons why Dhritarashtra was quizzing Sanjay was because he was concerned about this, about association. He was thinking, what will happen when my sons are at Kurukshetra? It's a sacred place, and then he'll be there with their saintly cousins. What will happen to them? Will they be influenced by this good association? That was his worry. Better find out whether they're still going to maintain their evil-mindedness and not be affected by the saintly association of their cousins. So association is very, very, very powerful. So therefore, you know, Vedic literature describes this is bad association, this is good association. We cultivate this quality, or we cultivate this characteristic, or we cultivate, seek out this kind of association. Especially the association of the devotees, that will automatically bring us to the mode of goodness, which is recommended for elevation. But it also puts us in a situation where we can render service, because actually, and you know, you, our endeavours or our qualifications don't necessarily mean anything. Our material qualifications don't mean anything to Krishna. What's actually required is service. Sevam mukhe hijivado swayam eva spratyada. What is it? Atasi Krishna namadi nabhaved grayam indriyai sevam mukhe hijivado swayam eva spratyada. You know, our material senses, our material qualifications are not what enables us to see Krishna. So it's not by our efforts. You know, sometimes we talk about self-realization if it's something that we do. But actually, it's not something that we do. It's our mood. It's our
it's our mentality, devotional mentality, what attracts Krishna. Just like we were discussing yesterday at some delicious place. That Krishna says, you know, you can offer me a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water. Now, when we're offering things to Krishna, we can't actually give Krishna anything, because he has everything already. Right? What is there that we can give Krishna that he doesn't already have? Right? He doesn't need a fast car. Right? He doesn't need a fancy set of clothes. He's already got a big wardrobe. Right? You imagine in all of the temples around the world how much all the clothes that he's got to wear. In Melbourne he's got something like, you know, 200 sets of clothes. Right? How many sets of clothes have we got? So, you know, what can we give Krishna? We can't really give him anything because he already owns everything. Whatever he desires, he gets. What can you give somebody who basically whatever he wants, he already has it? So therefore the emphasis is on bhakti. Careful. Not jnana or karma, right? Not how much you know or what you do, right? Not how much what you know or what you do, but rather it's the mood in which you do it. It's how we offer what we do in appreciation to Krishna. So therefore Prabhupada says, you know, seva mukhe hi jiva, it's the service that we do, beginning with the tongue, basically. Chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasadam. We put great emphasis on taking prasadam. Even, you know, people come to the temple and it appears they're coming just for a feed. Right? So we think, oh, what are you coming here for? Just want to fill your belly. No, they're coming to do service. And it's an easier service. They come and take prasadam. But it's from that. That's the beginning. Hearing, chanting. It all begins with the tongue. It creates that mood of bhakti or devotion, whereby, you know, we appreciate Krishna and what Krishna's giving us in the association of the devotees, in his service. Then as the devotee, as we develop that, as our heart softens and we want to reciprocate more and more with Krishna, then Krishna reveals himself as a result of the service, not as a result of our individual qualifications. So the mode of goodness is desirable, especially for the devotees. You know, when our devotional service is performed and it is tinged with passion or it is tinged with ignorance, then we don't make advancement, because, you know, mode of passion means there's material motivations mixed in with our devotional service. And, you know, mode of ignorance means, you know, you're just doing stupid things that are not helping you at all, really. Also contaminating, it means reinforcing ultimately the mode of ignorance and bodily consciousness. So in order for Krishna to reveal himself, we have to reciprocate or to render service. And that service can be, you know, that can be the most menial of, so, you know, cleaning the courtyard, keeping the street clean for Krishna is attracting Krishna. Of course, we may also do more significant other services which are significant. But each one of those services done in the right, you know, you can be as an example, you know, we praise the book distributors and say, yeah, try to do. But, you know, if you're a book distributor thinking, oh, I'm a big book distributor, blah, 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 blah. I'm the big preacher. Right? It's a wrong mood. It's not really done in a proper mood of devotion. But this is important. And also, this, you know, the Vedic
well, the Bhagavatam especially, teaches us the stories in the Bhagavatam and illustrate that mood of service in the characteristic of all of the devotees that are described, you know, coming to the topmost point of the gopis, who in one sense, you know, unsophisticated, you know, they weren't great Vedic scholars, and they weren't doing any big, they weren't performing any big activities, you know, their karma was, what were the activities that they were performing? They were just simple cattle girls milking cows and, you know, cooking and simple lifestyle, if you like. But their devotion is their, you know, is the barometer of their success, if you like. And their mood of surrender, sacrificing everything for Krishna. And Papa tells a story of how Krishna had a headache. And I can't remember who told him, but somebody, he went to the doctor, I suppose, and the doctor said, there's no cure for your headache other than you need to take the dust of the lotus feet of your devotees. So then Krishna went to his devotees and he asked them, was it Narada Muni, wasn't it? Yeah, you got Narada Muni, go and ask my devotees for some dust off their lotus feet. So Narada Muni went to a few of the devotees and asked them for the dust of their lotus feet to cure Krishna's headache. And I said, no way, I'll go to hell. If my feet touch Krishna's head, I'll go to hell. So he reported back to Krishna, he said, nobody wants to give. So Krishna said, go and see the gopis. And the gopis said, oh, fine, if I have to go to hell, okay, if Krishna's happy, no problem. So we can understand that, you know, this mood of being prepared to give everything to Krishna. What is that? Atmanivedanam. Give everything. That's done through the rendering of service. Which is one of the reasons why, you know, when devotees first come, then generally we tend to encourage them to do some fairly menial things. To test, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would test people by, you know, sending them to clean the schoolhouse. Okay, you want to do service? Go and clean the schoolhouse. And in India, you know, that is a significant service. Woo! A schoolhouse can be a pretty smelly place. So, Vedic literature teaches us, you know, what is inferior and what is superior by material calculations, right? But what is actually superior is devotional service. So we may have material qualifications, but those material qualifications become, you know, in terms of the modes of ignorance, passion and goodness, they become subservient, if you like, to the power of bhakti or devotion. We do, however, cultivate the mode of goodness in our devotional service. So it is important to be in the mode of goodness. It's not that we disregard it, but it's not the goal. The goal, it's a platform or it's a support, if you like, for the performance of bhakti. And what is of ultimate or what is superior is our devotion. So, you know, you may be born as a sudra, but that doesn't mean you're disqualified. You can still do bhakti. And if you engage in the process of devotional service, then we find there's the rules and regulations of devotional service automatically bring anybody, regardless of whatever their material position is, to a platform of goodness. So there's a regulated lifestyle. We may be engaged in our natural inclinations or propensities in terms of the work that we do, But again, that's governed by the fact that we're offering it to Krishna. Right? So there's the devotion in what we do. So that elevates the activities of a sudra, vaishya, kshatriya, brahmana to devotional service, which is transcendental. And we want the transcendental qualification, not the material qualification. That's the important point. And we use that, you know, that power of discrimination and the instructions of the Vedas basically to facilitate cultivating that mood of devotion. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Sri Gopal. G. Parabdha. Yeah, you've got it. We've got it. We're stuck with it. There's this thing.
The question would be, do devotional service interfere with Parabdha Karma, or the Lord does not have any role in that?
In most cases, no. Well, most cases, no. But in some cases, yes. Who's an example? It was exceptional. Certainly, yes, it is possible. But generally speaking, we take initiation, and ostensibly, if you look, nothing's changed, really. Right? Although it has changed. The reactions that we're getting are ultimately then controlled by Krishna. It's under Krishna's direction when a devotee takes initiation, for example. It looks the same, but actually it's not. The reactions that we're getting now are being orchestrated and coordinated by Krishna. But we may not see any drastic change. But Prabhupada gives the example. Devotional service is like a fan. You can have a fan plugged in, turned on, and it's spinning around, right? But if you unplug it, it'll still spin for some time. But then eventually it'll stop. So similarly also for a devotee, he engages in devotional service. It appears that he's still in his material body. But actually, if he's following the process of devotional service, his karma is gradually winding down so that when he leaves this body that he doesn't have to take birth again. Right? Janma karma chamejivyam what is evam yoviti tatpataha chakvade hampuna janma naeti mamiti sarjuna. So Prabhupada says in the purport, all you need to know is Krishna, and then you don't take birth again. Right? So that's what happens. By following the process of devotional service, we know Krishna. We get to know Krishna anyway, that's the whole idea. So, ostensibly, if you look at what's going on, you know, we take initiation, we follow the process of devotional service, but our prarabdha karma, we've still got this body, and we still have to go through old age, we still have to get disease, and we still die, right? But it is not the same as the prarabdha karma that's being experienced by a non-devotee. Because that karma is being orchestrated by Krishna. Now there are unique examples where Krishna can interfere with the prarabdha karma more drastically of a devotee. Who can think of an example? Ajamil. We still, yeah, I guess, well, he wasn't what I was thinking of, but possibly, yeah. Another more. What about Vasudev Dutta, the leper? When Lord Chaitanya embraced him, you know, he had all pussy, oozy sores and things, but then he was embraced by Lord Chaitanya, and then everything disappeared, so he looked very handsome and wholesome again. Right? So there we see a drastic change of prarabdha. But actually there is a drastic change of prarabdha for us also. If we follow the process of devotional service, that means no more material body in this lifetime. Right? So the prarabdha karma has been burned off. It's just that we don't see that, we can't see it, so we know the same old thing. But it's not. How does that sound? Mahatma Ji.
You said very nicely, this body is anartha. Prabhupada said in one of the lectures, this body is anartha.
Is it what?
Anartha.
Anartha.
Yes.
Yes, but try doing devotional service without it.
Lord,
It's anatta, but it's also artha. It's also absolutely essential.
If we don't do devotional service, the body is completely anatta.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think we can look at it this way. If we just concentrate on the body, then it becomes anatta. But, you know, it's a balance. It's a balance. And therefore we have these you know, accepting those things that are positive and rejecting those things which are unnecessary. And, you know, we can't rule the body out of, you know, we can't ignore the body because, you know, ignore the body, then you get sick, then you can't do your seva. So it's fairly useful, actually. And, you know, you may have the body of a dog or a fish or something. Then that's disqualification, or it's an obstacle, it's a setback. So especially the human form of life, was it? Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now that you've got the human form of life, it's time to inquire about the absolute truth. Atato. Interesting to see what the translation of atato means, because arta is in that word. Right. So, you know, in one sense, it could be argued that the human form of life is absolutely essential. Without the human form of life, where are you going? Nowheresville. Isn't it? Try to get a dog to chant. Lord Chaitanya could do it. He could get the animals to chant, but not, you know, they're very fortunate. There's an example of Prarabdha Karma being converted by Krishna directly. He gets the animals to chant, gets the tigers and the elephants to embrace each other. And they're having a kirtan in the Jarikanda forest. But that's where Krishna can change the karma. But ordinarily, if you've got a body of an elephant or a tiger, well, As an elephant, you can carry the deity on your head. So maybe you get to do some devotional service if you're lucky. Lucky elephant. But ordinarily, you know, elephant means it's bad karma. A human form of life is very important.
You mentioned the four orders of God.
Yes.
According to the three modes of nature.
Yes. Yes.
So in those four orders, anyone can take up a devotional service.
Yeah, well, even the animal, human, Dvipada Pashu, can take up devotional service. That's the potency. Devotional service is so potent that it overrides the modes of material nature. Conditioned nature goes back to Godhead.
If they're successful in the process of devotion,
then
the conditional nature is taken away.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. You know, that's why, by the mercy of the devotees, anybody can be elevated. Like, I was listening, Prabhupada was saying, you know, a devotee doesn't even like to see the trees cut down. Unnecessarily, he says. You know, if you're a farmer and you're growing trees, that's another thing maybe, but, you know, unnecessarily harming other living entities is... So, by the mercy of the devotee, anybody can be elevated, even the trees. Prabhupada says, you know, the proper use of cutting down trees is to make paper and then to print the Bhagavatam on the paper, distribute the Bhagavatam. So, you know, the trees get elevated by that. Right? So
So, our conditioned nature when engaged by the expert devotee can be, so in other words, a devotee can see almost an advanced devotee or an experienced, shall we say, mature devotee can see the potential for engagement in anybody and will engage them according to their propensity or to that. Take the positive. And what's Krishna's gunagrahi, which means he takes the essence or the good. Adosha darshi, he doesn't see the faults. So we take the positive in any situation from someone and use it in Krishna's service. That's it.
What do we call devotional service?
Shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, all the nine items of activity in devotional service. Surrendering.
That is
nine items. Hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, archanam, right, doing the deity worship, vandanam, offering prayers, dasyam, service. Sakyam, becoming a friend, these are elevated. And Atmanavedinam, giving, you know, offering everything to Krishna.
Yes.
Yes.
What is that?
It means in that particular instance, sarva dharmam pratityajya means give up materially motivated religiosity and take to serving me without any material motivation, basically. Take to devotional service. Now, devotional service means for each one of us something slightly different. It's the same thing, but because of each one, because of our individuality, we go to we need to be engaged according to our individuality. So each one of us will have different propensities. We're engaging in the same thing, i.e. devotional service. But this is why we approach a spiritual master. So we approach somebody who's experienced in devotional service and then we seek guidance from them as to how to apply those nine items of devotional service practically in our daily activities. So that 24 hours a day we're engaged in Krishna service. Right? Yes, that means following the order of the spiritual master effectively initially. You know, so, you know, like Narayani was saying, you know, she's done 34 or 40 years of devotional service, and she was saying how she hasn't got to the point of serving Krishna 24 hours. But, you know, if we look at everything that she did, then we can understand that even her sleeping was devotional service. And so therefore she was engaged 24 hours a day. She's just being humble. Sleeping is one of the easier forms of devotional service. So something that we all have a fairly natural aptitude for. But sleeping is also, you know, sleeping is important. Makes you peaceful. You know, you may go to bed with all sorts of ideas in your head and disturbed, and you go to sleep, and you wake up in the morning. Oh, gee, I feel better. Right? So even sleeping has its utility. Although, as Prabhupada points out, the Goswamis gave up even sleeping.
When you sleep, Krishna in mind is okay. But when you sleep, Krishna doesn't come to the mind. If you get also a different distortion.
Yeah, you certainly can. Therefore, sleeping is also a mode of ignorance. We have to be careful about the service of sleeping. All right, I think we should finish here. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktavrinda ki jai.